from KQED.
From KQED Public Radio, this is Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Coming up, pit bulls and their owners back in the doghouse. The deadly attack of a pregnant woman by her unneutered male pit bull in Pacifica last week is reigniting debate over whether stronger controls are needed. Supporters say the problem isn't the breed, it's the people who raise them. That pit bulls are smart, loyal, and with the right upbringing, friendly. But at least one Bay Area city is considering new restrictions on pit bulls, and owners are, once again, on the defensive. We'll hear both sides and take your phone calls, and we'll get started with Forum right after this. Good morning and welcome to Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, and today for Michael Krasny. Well, it's been more than 10 years since Diane Whipple was attacked and killed by a neighbor's pit bull in her San Francisco apartment building. But news last week that a pregnant woman in Pacifica was fatally mauled by a family pit bull brought back awful memories of that attack and others. So it's no surprise that a new round of debate has erupted about pit bulls, whether they're a dangerous breed that needs to be restricted or an unfairly maligned animal whose behavior is just a reflection of their owner. That's our focus this hour, and we begin with Joanne Sanders, who's a city council member and mayor pro tem in the city of Sonoma, where they are considering some new laws around pit bulls. And Mayor Sanders, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning.
Council member, let me begin by asking you what prompted this consideration of some kind of restriction? Was it related to what happened in Pacifica, or was this under consideration earlier?
Well, Dan, this has been considered several years back in Sonoma, and I can't really speak to what the outcome was at that time. But certainly what happened in Pacifica has brought this to the forefront once again, and not to mention other occurrences, not only Diane Whipple, who unfortunately was killed by not a pit bull, actually, by a Presa Canario type of vicious dog. And then the little boy in San Francisco, 12-year-old boy, who was killed by a pit bull in his own home. And another event that occurred in Sonoma County not very long ago where a pit bull jumped the fence in a neighborhood and mauled a little girl in her own backyard, an innocent little girl in her own backyard who was playing. So it's been a whole host of events that have kept this at the top of my mind, and I believe it's a public safety issue, and I'm interested in revisiting it for my community.
What kinds of things are you considering?
I've directed staff to bring forward all the options in a city's toolbox, so to speak, for addressing the safety of the residents with regard to vicious dogs. So that could range from more strict licensing. It could be registration of these dogs, or more ways to identify them, all the way up through requiring, as City of San Francisco does, requiring the neutering of these dogs. Because it's my understanding that when these dogs are unneutered, they have a higher occurrence of making these attacks on innocent people and children.
Are there any such restrictions currently on the books, either in the city of Sonoma or the county?
I'm not aware. Well, that's just exactly the point, is that the research needs to be done so that the council has all the information. To my knowledge, we have no requirement in the city or county for neutering of these types of dogs. I know we do have, according to the police chief, we have a vicious dog ordinance in place, but we need to look at it and identify what options it gives law enforcement when a situation comes up.
And what kind of reaction have you gotten so far from the public?
Well, you know, this is a charged issue, of course, and I am not insensitive to how this makes some people feel about their pets, who they love very dearly and who may happen to be identified as either a vicious dog, or specifically a pit bull or a pit bull mix. I've been a dog owner, and I understand the profound love we have for our pets. So it's a charged issue, and I've gotten response quite a bit of response yesterday when this hit the press in our regional paper in the Press Democrat. And certainly there are people out there who I think watch these issues across the nation, and they fire off emails that are, you know, 1,000 words about how this is a ridiculous idea. And I even had somebody do a friend request on Facebook to me, and they put my picture in a big red slash through it and called me evil and made that their own profile picture. Yeah. So,
well, it
riles people up for sure.
It does. It does. Well, thanks for bringing us up to speed on what you're thinking up there in Sonoma. Let me just, final question. Does it seem to you, as you think about this and begin to learn more, that as others say, that the problem is really the owners rather than the dog? And if it is, what might you do in that regard?
Well, Sonoma County or San Francisco, I believe, requires an insurance policy on the people who own vicious dogs. Dogs have been identified as vicious, a liability policy. But the whole reason, I mean, I'm glad you brought this up, because that argument is starting to fall flat, frankly. And if you look at these dogs who are now they're not mauling strangers. They're mauling the hand that feeds them in their own domain. The little boy who is, I believe his name is Nicholas Fabish in San Francisco, that he was in his own home with the dog. This woman in Pacifica, this poor woman, she was in her own home with her own pet. That tells me, I highly doubt that these owners are teaching their dogs to attack them. So that speaks to the unpredictability of these vicious dogs and the need for further review of how we're going to move forward.
All right. Joanne Sanders, councilwoman from the city of Sonoma, thanks for joining us this morning.
Thank you. It's been my pleasure. And hey, thanks a lot for having this topic up right now. It's very timely.
You bet. Well, let's broaden the discussion a little bit now. With me here in the studio is Jennifer Scarlett. She's co-president of the San Francisco SPCA. Good to have you with us.
Thank you for having me.
Also joining us by phone is Colleen Lynn. She's founder of DogsBite.org, which is a public education and a dog bites victim advocacy group. She joins us from Austin, Texas this morning. And also on the phone, John Vinton. He's a San Rafael-based dog trainer. Welcome to both of you as well. Let me begin with you, Jennifer Scarlett. You just heard the city councilwoman talking about some of her concerns. What would you say in response to anything that she had to say?
Well, one is there's a confusion around a vicious dog versus a breed. And what we know is that you can't predict behavior from a breed. And even if you could, heritability is just one of many influences on whether a dog has a propensity to bite. Those other influences are early experiences, socialization, training, excuse me, medical health, and victims' behavior. So we have to separate vicious dog and laws around vicious dogs, in other words, a known behavior, versus a breed. And a breed biologically is equivalent to a race. The second is on the Sonoma County website, it says that there is a mandatory spay-neuter law for pit bull-type dogs, any dog over 4 months of age, and it's been indefinitely suspended. So from what I can gather on the website, there is a spay-neuter mandate. It's just the county isn't able to support it.
And San Francisco, among other Bay Area cities, has such a law. Describe it and how well it's working.
San Francisco does have a breed-specific legislation on spay-neuter, and we're a little bit uneasy about breed discrimination. However, as an organization, we strongly believe in spay-neuter. So if the worst thing that's going to happen to a dog in this kind of debate is spay-neuter, it's hard for me to get riled up about that. It has had a very positive impact on lowering the number of pit bulls and pit bull-type dogs that are coming into animal care and control our city shelter. Since it's been enacted, we have not had a fatal mauling in San Francisco.
Now, I know that there are a lot of pit bulls that get rescued, that are found on the streets, taken away from owners. Many of them go, or I think maybe they all go originally to Animal Care and Control, which the city runs. And then you take some of them. The SPCA takes some. How do you decide which ones to take?
Well, for all the animals that we take, we try to assess whether or not they're going to be fitted to our program? In other words, are they capable of creating a bond with a safe bond with a human? You know, behavior is complex. It changes. But we do our best to use evidence-based behavior testing methods to fit them in our program.
And how do you screen out owners or people that want to adopt a pit bull?
We have a long conversation, and for high-energy dogs of any breed, we have a longer conversation about what their lifestyle is like, what their experience is like. And for some of them, we actually require that they come back for training classes.
I want to bring in Colleen Lind, founder of DogsBite.org. You've been listening to the conversation here this morning, and I know you're up on what's happened in Pacifica. What jumps out at you based on what you've heard about the incident down there in Pacifica with Darla Napora and the dog Gunner, who was not a neutered male, was an unneutered male?
Well, first of all, it's been said a couple of times, and it was even in her obituary, that she was a strong follower of bad rap. Okay, and bad rap provides a lot of educational materials for pit bull owners to help them be more responsible pit bull owners. So in their top 15 list of the top 15 things a pit bull owner should do, number 2 is spay neuter. So we don't know why, you know, being an avid supporter of bad rep, that she did not get that done to her dog. So that's a problem right there. It's something like, you know, the education just alone isn't working, right, versus the law.
Although we should point out it was a joint decision, presumably her husband, Greg, also
true.
Owner of the dog.
True, it was a joint decision.
Yeah.
Exactly. And so, and then I also think what jumps out is just, you know, for me, because I am a victim as well, you know, the media report said that she suffered, you know, serious injuries to her arms, face and neck, and she was those are defensive wounds on her arms. So she was in that house with this dog that she raised for 2 years, and she was defending herself. She wasn't just fighting for her own life. She was fighting for her child. And at some point, she had to realize that that dog was not going to stop. And that is one of the fundamental things, reasons why, you know, why we want to regulate pit bulls, because that is one of their unique attack traits. They don't stop once they start.
And I should point out, we did invite a representative from Bad Rap to be on the show this morning, and they declined to do that. Let me bring in John Vinton. You help dog people who train dogs, or you train dogs who are, including ones who are aggressive. How do you deal with pit bulls?
Well, I probably deal with more pit bulls than any other dog out there. I do not know why they're so popular, but they're a very popular breed. Most, I'd say 80% of the pit bulls I work with, if not higher percentage, are very lovable, sweet, well-natured dogs that show no sign of aggression toward other dogs or people. Although there is a fair amount of them that are aggressive. How I deal with it is basically how I deal with almost any impulse that dogs have. And a big part of dog training is teaching the dogs, one, respect for their owner, and also to override bigger and bigger impulses. And I think, you know, that's the real key. And obviously when you've got an aggressive dog, it's a learned behavior, and what we have to do is turn that around. But obviously the biggest key is to preventing the dog from going down that path. And just like we teach dogs not to mouth us, like, you know, just like, you know, teeth touch skin or jump up on us, we have to teach dogs to override that impulse. But once it gets in the dog's head that, you know, aggression gets me what I want or is a coping mechanism, then it's more difficult, of course, to get that out of the dog's head.
And is it any more or less difficult to get that idea to untrain, say, aggressive behavior in a dog that's a pit bull than any other breed?
Well, again, I think that there's generalizations are kind of a dangerous thing, but as a breed, they are a tenacious breed. Yeah, some dogs are easier to train than others. Some dogs are stubborn. Some dogs are tenacious. And it's also bred into them to be that way. You know, Labradors, Golden Retrievers, they're bred to be more docile and follow orders, as where many breeds are, you know, designed to go hunt or to go chase vermin or to go fight. In the case of, you know, a lot of pit bulls were bred, you know, some people bred that fighting instinct in them, and it's kind of done that. Not all dogs are bred that way, of course. Not all pit bulls are bred that way, but some people do look for that tendency, and then they breed those dogs to get more of a tenacious dog.
That's John Vinton. He's a San Rafael-based dog trainer. We're talking about pit bulls this morning in the wake of last week's terrible dog mauling and death of Darla Napora, a dog owner, killed by her dog, Gunner. And if you want to join us this morning, the number is 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. You can also send us your comments by email, forum@kqed.org, or you can go to our Facebook page and leave a comment there. Join the discussion. It's facebook.com/KQED forum. Jennifer Scarlett, I think on your blog you said that pit bulls are a lot of dog. I think that's the phrase you used. What do you mean by that?
They're a very high energy dog, and we prefer that we have an experienced dog owner who has lots of time to exercise them. One of the things we know when we deal with anxiety or high energy dogs is that the one thing that's going to help them more than anything else is exercise.
And, you know, exercise is always a good idea. But behavior all dogs or cats, for that matter, are animals first and then they're pets, right? I mean, is that a fair way to describe it? I mean, they're animals. I mean,
sure. And we're humans first and we're guardians
exactly.
second.
And just as we act badly sometimes, dogs act badly as well from time to time. How unpredictable is it?
Well, behavior... one of the constants of behavior is that it changes and it's complex. And when we look at this issue, it's not just a pit bull issue or a behavior issue. It's really a public policy issue. And we should start looking at that. I want to make a nod to what happened to Darla. It's horrific. Anybody who has been mauled or hurt by a dog, it's horrific. But we need to take ourselves away from this individual incident and really look at public policy, because there's actually something called a number needed to ban that has been done by epidemiologist Gary Petronik that shows that you would have to remove about 100,000 dogs to be able to prevent one serious dog bite. And that's using evidence-based medicine that is used in human medicine. So that is a horrendous thing to do to a community when you can't...
But no one's really suggesting that, are they?
Well, there are communities that are suggesting breed bans.
Well, that's illegal in California, though.
It is.
Yeah.
But if you look at Denver and if you look at some of the things that are promoted by groups like Dog Bite, you know, bans are on the list. So we have to take a very logical look at public safety issues.
Coming back to this idea, John Vinton, that behavior is somewhat unpredictable. Would you feel comfortable having, say, a neighbor who owned a pit bull if you didn't know who the neighbor was and where the dog came from?
Yes, I would base it on my experience with the dog, not whether there was a pit bull per se. But if I go outside and I see a pit bull dragging their owner down the street, barking and pulling at the leash to get anybody, regardless of the breed, I'm not going to be comfortable. But if I found out, if you told me yesterday, like, my owner's got a pit bull, I would have no problem with that whatsoever.
But if you've got an owner who's, you know, being dragged down the street by a beagle or a Dalmatian, you know, is it fair to say you should be, you know, less concerned than if it's a pit bull?
Obviously, a beagle is going to pose less of a threat than a pit bull, but German Shepherds, Rottweilers, Dobies, German Shepherds are my personal favorite dog, but still I wouldn't, you know, obviously those pose a much bigger threat than a beagle. But a beagle can, we worked with aggressive beagles and they can last a nasty night too, but you're right. Obviously, pit bulls are much scarier, and I'd rather face a beagle than a pit bull for sure.
And Jennifer Scarlett, what are your thoughts about that? Are pit bulls... a good dog for the city? Are they a better dog for a rural area or a suburban area where, you know, they can run around in the backyard, that kind of thing?
I don't think that they're the best dog for a city because they take a lot of energy and exercise, but they're here and they are capable of coping and living in the city in a very safe manner. There are lots of other breeds that also require a tremendous amount of exercise. Border collies and cattle dogs also have a tough time. A city is a hard place to be a dog.
Would you agree with what John Vinton just said, that, if you don't, all things being equal, if you don't know the dog owner and the history of the dog, that, one should be a little more cautious around a more aggressive dog or a bigger dog, a lot of dog, like you say, a pit bull is?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, Chihuahuas are very high on the bite list, but, you know, their size makes them much less of a threat. And, you know, our ability to read dogs as humans is actually not that great. And that's also part of the problem. Dogs send a lot of signals to us and each other, and we don't oftentimes pick up on them.
And let me just ask you the question I asked our other guest, Colleen Lynn, earlier. Looking at the Pacifica situation, what jumps out at you other than the fact that the dog was not neutered?
You know, it's a odd case when you look at other horrific events and maulings. Oftentimes, they tend to be with toddlers. They tend to be on the young side and the very old side, or family members or acquaintances who are walking into a pack of dogs. So this is highly unusual that it's that age, and it is the primary owner, and it's a single dog. The one constant in it is that he was intact. So there's more information to be coming out about this case, but it's unusual.
And is there any significance to the fact that she was pregnant?
I don't know.
You don't know. Based on scientific research, there's nothing that...
Well, and, you know, this brings up an interesting point. When you look at the number of deaths, and like I say, each of them is a tragedy, but we're looking at 30 deaths amongst 300 million people who live with almost 80 million dogs and have a lot of contact. That comment about it happens to family members, well, yes, because that's who's around dogs.
Jennifer Scarlett, co-president of the San Francisco SPCA, and joining us also this hour, Colleen Lynn, founder of DogsBite.org, and John Vinton, who is a dog trainer up in San Rafael. Let's go to the phones now. Sam is on the line in Pacifica. Welcome.
Yes, hi. This is my name is Sam, and I live in Pacifica, and this has been an issue for a while. We actually, in my neighborhood, have two off-leash pit bulls most of the time, and both owners are saying what sweet dogs they are, except one actually has a muzzle on them. And then the other one, just last week was just running around the neighborhood without its owner. And the whole thing is that we have to get back to the fact that these breeds over however long, 100 years, let's say, the pit bull specifically was bred as a fighting dog. And that's what's missing from this fundamental discussion. It's like trying to say that we're going to breed psychopaths for 100 years and then try to breed that out of them. It's like, how long is that going to take? And also, I think it's a false argument to say, well, there's only been 30 deaths in this. There's been a lot of attacks, too. If you look at the number of dog bites that have happened, and also I've witnessed on the beach that I live near in Linda Mar, pit bulls going after other dogs and causing a lot of damage and to the other dogs. And, you know, again, when you have a chihuahua biting you, it's like the bite's not going to cause much damage. With a dog that has been bred to actually fight and to cause a lot of damage, when that dog does bite you and go after you, it's going to cause a lot of damage by its fundamental nature. That's, I think, the issue that we have. And I've already shot off an email to the mayor of Pacifica, knowing what is going on in Dade County. And sure, maybe, you know, right now it's not the law that you're able to ban dogs in California, but we need to change that fundamentally and get rid of these vicious type dogs, period.
Jennifer Scarlett, the idea that the pit bulls and other kinds of dogs are bred historically for fighting and to be aggressive, can that be overcome with training and other things?
Breeds change very quickly. This type of dog was bred for its gaminess, so is also used for many other many other uses. And we know that breeds can change very quickly. For example, the Cocker Spaniel about 30 years ago was very high on the bite list, and it was because of a phenotype that it was bred for that it was associated with a trait of very high confidence. So yes, are there people breeding dogs and pit bull type dogs for their aggressiveness? Unfortunately, yes. It follows some very strong socioeconomic lines as well, it's something that can be changed rather quickly, and it certainly takes responsible dog ownership. The fact that you have free-roaming dogs in Pacifica is wrong.
All right. Jennifer Scarlett, again, co-president of the San Francisco SPCA. We'll have more with her and our other guests as we explore this idea of pit bulls, what kind of pets they make, what kind of neighbors they make. Give us a call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786, or email us. It's forum@kqed.org, or go to our Facebook page. It's facebook.com/KQED Forum. I'm Scott Schaefer, here today for Michael Krasny. Stay with us. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Michael Krasny. In this hour, we're talking about pit bulls in light of the tragedy that happened in Pacifica last week, where a pregnant woman was mauled to death by her unneutered male pit bull. We're talking this hour with Jennifer Scarlett from the San Francisco SPCA, also Colleen Lynn, who's founder of DogsBite.org, which advocates for dog bite victims. She's with us this morning from Austin, Texas, and John Vinton, who is a dog trainer up in San Rafael. If you want to join us this for this discussion, again, the number 866-733-6786. Let's go to Megan in San Jose. Welcome.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
14 years ago, my husband was mauled by a pit bull when he was at work. And at the time, I thought anyone who had one of these dogs is crazy. They should be illegal. They're dangerous. And I wholeheartedly supporting legislation to not allow people to own them. Well, fast forward to now, my husband and I actually own a pit bull. She's a great pet. I took a lot of work to train her. She wasn't a very well socialized or trained dog when we first got her. She came from a shelter situation. But I think one of the big problems with pit bulls is a lot of people acquire them outside the shelter system, so they're not spayed and neutered. Young, inexperienced dog owners own them. People own them for the wrong reasons. And frankly, I think some people that own them probably shouldn't have them.
I'm curious, how did you go from having your husband mauled by a pit bull to owning one? What was that tipping point for you?
Well, I think I met a couple, and I thought they were nice dogs. And we came across this one who needed a home. She seemed like a nice dog, and so we took her in. I used to train horses that injured their owners, and so I've had, you know, some pretty solid experience training animals, and a lot of the same concepts carry over to training dogs. I'm also a pretty dominant person, and my dog is very well trained, and I put a lot of work into her, so I felt maybe a little more confident dealing with an animal like that than most people would.
How's she get along with your husband?
She loves him.
Okay.
And she sits in his lap. He loves this dog. I wish he loved me as much as he loves this dog.
Colleen Lynn, I'm sorry to cut you off there. Colleen Lynn, what about this notion that, you know, the kind of owner, that there are some people who just shouldn't own a dog like this? What are your thoughts about that, and what could be done in terms of public policy in that regard?
Well, that's a difficult one. I mean, you know, well, to start, so education as part of a public health issue is never done alone. It's always done in cohesion with laws, okay? Stop smoking campaigns, done in cohesion with stopping, you know, disallowing people to smoke in restaurants and so forth and so on. So, I mean, I think it's not a good idea to just focus on the owner. It's not enough, this whole educational focus. It is important, but it needs to be backed up with a law. And that's true with all serious public health issues.
John Vinton, what are your thoughts about that in terms of, I realize you're a dog trainer, not a politician, but what kinds of policy come to mind that would, you know, somehow prevent or make it more difficult for the wrong, quote-unquote, wrong people to have pit bulls or any aggressive dog?
Yeah, well, I think that's the thing is that I'm not sure I want to single out pit bulls. I mean, there are a lot of dog bites and pit bulls are not far and away the most aggressive dogs out there. They have a tendency more so than golden retrievers for sure. As far as passing legislation, I am a strong proponent of neutering. As a matter of fact, I tell everyone of my clients, if you're not going to breed the dog, you should get them neutered. It helps not only with training and preventing aggression, but I really think the key is the training, because I've worked with a lot of dogs that are neutered and are still aggressive. A lot of people neuter their dog, but they still don't necessarily prevent aggression. So it's almost like I feel like it may be a false sense of security if they feel like, well, if I get my dog neutered and spayed, I won't have an aggressive dog. And that is definitely not the case. So whether I'm backing, you know, legislation to enforce that and make sure that everybody who owns a pit bull get them spayed and neutered, I'm not sure I'm a proponent of that.
Jennifer Scarlett, I know you said the SPCA does work with potential owners, people who want to adopt pit bulls and all animals. But I know you're a big proponent of public policy as a way of dealing with this. So how would you get at this question of, you know, the wrong people, gang members? And I don't want to stereotype but too much, but, you know, people who have the dog for status because they want an aggressive dog. They want to have, an intimidating kind of an animal.
Well, I don't think that you can legislate on that, because once again, we're going to discriminatory areas. But we know from what happened after Katrina, focus groups looked at, talked to people about, well, why are all these dogs intact? Because that's one of the things that we discovered after that. And it was about access. People wanted their dogs spayed and neutered. They had nothing against it, but it was about access. And we have found that in San Francisco, which is why we started a community cares initiative. We know that the majority of dogs that are euthanized in San Francisco are pit bull types, and they come from certain neighborhoods, marginalized, underserved neighborhoods, neighborhoods without a veterinarian in their zip code. So we go there now, and we offer vaccines, impromptu training services, and spay-neuter. So really, access as well as policy is just as strongly associated with preventing this.
All right, let's go up to Sebastopol now. Diane, welcome to the program.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I would like to reinforce the point that we've been breeding dogs for hundreds of years to do particular things. I happen to have a lap dog. When she sees a lap happening anywhere, anybody, she has a tropism. She, like, goes to that lap and works her way into it because she's been bred for hundreds of years to do that. Pit bulls have been bred to have, I think they call it game. Basically, they have a click stop where they switch from a nice, you know, regular old dog to an aggressive dog. And they have no control over that. The dogs have no control over that. It's bred into them. And so people who find a dog that's not on the aggression setting, a pit bull, that's not on the aggression setting, they think it's a really nice dog, but they don't know what's going to trigger it into the aggression setting often. I've seen this many times, a red hat, you know, a motorcycle, whatever it is, you know, these dogs, they just go off suddenly and there's not much you can do about it.
Well, let me ask John Vinton about that idea, that theory.
Well, again, I don't think it's universal. Dogs definitely react to triggers. Mainly when dogs are going off on triggers, it's usually a lack of socialization. The dog sees, if let's take the case of a red hat, or somebody wearing a hat would probably be more appropriate. And dogs see something, and all of a sudden they see that, and they go, that's unusual, that's something I have to contend to. That's why socialization and training at a very young age, especially with pit bulls, is so essential. Because you want to expose the dog to as many things, so when they see that, they don't have to react to it as something they have to contend with.
I've got some email here, and thanks, Diane, for the call. Some email here. Christy writes, I understand that some pit bulls can be mean if they have owners who encourage this, but I have to say my personal experience is that the meanest dogs I've ever met are Chihuahuas. They bark and snarl and will bite given half a chance, and their doting owners think it's cute and even laugh about it. Nevertheless, a bite is a bite. Maybe someone won't die from a Chihuahua bite, but it's painful and especially scary for kids. And Chris in Oakland writes, I completely agree with regulating pit bulls. In fact, Craigslist won't even let you list an ad with the words pit bull in it, but I've also had problems with pit bull mixes. Will this law apply to them, too? I'm not sure which law he's referring to. But Jennifer, what do you think about adopting? You know, a lot of people go to Craigslist for all kinds of things. Is it a good place to get an animal?
Absolutely not. Acquiring animals online is one of the worst things that you can do. Certainly, we know that there's a lot of puppy mills who hide behind online advertisements and use Craigslist. And oftentimes what you get online is a backyard breeder who is probably not a responsible breeder. In addition, you're not getting an animal that's spayed and neutered. So online purchasing or acquiring of animals is the worst you can do.
All right, back to the phones. Alex in San Rafael, good morning.
Yeah.
Hi, you're on the air.
I was actually mauled by a family dog when I was about 15 months old, and it actually wasn't a pit bull. It was a Springer Spaniel, and it suffered from a condition known as Springer Rage, where the dog was a totally sweet family dog, and then one day it just snapped. But to this day, I still love dogs. I think they are one of the best things out there, and I just want to say that every pit bull that I have ever met that was owned by a responsible owner is essentially a 60 to 80 pound lap dog. They are loving pets. They love their owners. They're fiercely loyal. But again, they have to be owned by someone who's responsible. On the flip side of that, one of my family dogs at my folks' apartment complex was actually attacked by a dog that was bred for dog fighting. It was a pit bull mastiff mix. And it was fine with people, but as soon as you put it around other dogs, it would snap and it would go into a rage and go after them. So I think the point that I'm trying to make is that when a dog goes after another person or another dog like this, you need to go after the owner, not the breed, because it has absolutely nothing to do with the breed. It has to do with the owner and the way they were raised. The example I like to use with people is you could take a golden retriever and beat it with a stick every day for its entire life, and it's going to be mean too. But the golden retriever has this reputation of being a sweet, nice dog. But it doesn't matter the breed. Whatever, if you treat it like that every single day, it's going to be mean.
All right, Alex, thanks. Thanks for your comments. Jennifer Scarlett, what do you think about that? I've never met a vicious golden retriever.
Oh, we golden retrievers, they, you know, in general, they're nice dogs. And let me get back to that. We have dogs because they make us laugh, because we enjoy their company. There are so many dogs who, you know, save more lives, certainly, than are lost to dogs every year. And, it, you know, to Alex's point, the way that they're raised and socialized is a huge impact on their future behavior.
Colleen Lynn, coming back to this question of the owner, because a lot of defenders of pit bulls and just the aggressive dogs generally will say it's not the breed. We've been hearing that all morning. It's not the breed; it's the owner. What do you advocate in that regard in terms of policy?
Definitely, the mandatory spay neuter of pit bulls. I mean, that's the very least a municipality can do. Okay, and there's a number of reasons for that.
I think we all agree on that.
Yeah. Okay.
What else?
And so in addition to that, well, because we are, you know, who we are in a dog bite victims advocacy group, we haven't talked at all about mandatory insurance, okay? So after a pit bull attack, usually there's never enough funds to help put that person back together again. Okay, now that's a huge issue. You know, the pit bull problem is first there's an attack, then there's the victim, then what, right? The medical care. And medical care for these bites is just, is extraordinary. You know, the pit bull that attacked me broke my arm, okay? It was $20,000 in 24 hours in a trauma unit, okay? And that was not a facial bite. That did not take years and years of cosmetic surgery, which most of these facial techs do. So, I mean, I think a conversation that needs to be had, and this is not necessarily even breed-specific. I mean, it can be. I mean, I think owners of dogs who have a safety track records, like pit bulls and Rottweilers, that those dogs need to be insured. Why should anyone have the right to own a dog like that that we know is well documented, can inflict, you know, catastrophic injury?
I don't know, Jennifer Scarlett, does the SPCA get into issues like that? I mean, we're going to have a larger national conversation about mandated insurance,
no,
probably at the U.S.
Yeah.
Supreme Court. But that's
once
involving
again,
healthcare.
when we look at these numbers, there are lots and lots and lots of pit type dogs. And once again, this is not a definite breed. This is a typey dog that is a multitude of breeds. And so for us to even recognize them is difficult enough. And now we're going to impose extra insurance and things based on a phenotype. And, you know, frankly, we don't identify breeds very well. And that's what we're using to impose these extra insurance policies. And that is cumbersome and unfair.
Some more email here. Robert in San Francisco writes, to liken a dog breed to a race is illogical anthropomorphism. Human races are not bred for certain traits, where dog breeds are bred for certain actions and functions. Pit bulls are bred with a propensity toward aggression in a way that retrievers and spaniels are not. And also Richard writes, it's the lethality factor that's the issue. A pit bull is one of the few breeds that can kill a human being. No one ought to be subject to that potentiality. Back to the phones, and Kristen is on the line in Palo Alto. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I'm a pit bull owner. I own two pit bulls. I also own a yellow lab mix, and I've also volunteered in local animal shelters, so I've got to meet a lot of dogs. Of various types, and unfortunately a lot of them are pit bulls or pit bull types. And just something that I've noticed that I sort of find is missing from a lot of conversations is, I think, a little bit of a balanced view, in my opinion. I think a lot of pro-pit bull groups sort of, I know that they're trying to promote a very pro-pit bull image of a very well-balanced, well-trained dog, and every pit bull is going to be the best one you've met. but you know, I think that all dogs, like all humans, have sort of a different personality and a different level of sort of social comfort. And, you know, I know my dogs have different levels of social comfort in certain situations. And, you know, they are rescues, and I have them training, and they're both fixed. And, you know, they're very well socialized and they go out with me, but I still know that they have very different personalities, and I think it's not, you know, always well addressed. And I think that, you know, anti-pitbull groups sort of try to paint them all as these sort of ticking time bombs, but I think there's something in between, that they're individual dogs that should be, you know, based, should be judged, I think, on individual characteristics, not as a breed.
And Jennifer, in that regard, is it sort of best or safest, or whatever the word you want to use, to get a puppy where you can be in full control? You'll know exactly what kind of upbringing, what kind of training they had, how they're socialized, versus an adult dog where, you know, you may or may not know all of the history of the dog.
No, not always, because there's a lot that happens in adolescence. And we always say you're not quite sure what you're going to get fully until you go through adolescence. And I'm sorry to be anthropomorphic again, but that's true of humans as well as dogs. So, you know, having a puppy is great because you have that bonding experience early on and you have control over their socialization. So, yes, if you you do have a lot more say in that, but it's not necessarily the best choice for everybody.
John Vinton, what are your thoughts about that, puppies versus adult dogs?
Well, there are a lot of beautiful adult dogs there going. If you do acquire a dog without their history, I think that you are at a slight disadvantage than if you get a 8-week-old puppy and know what you're doing. Having said that, though, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't do proper socialization and training, you are, you know, a puppy can just as easily turn into an aggressive dog as well.
Yeah. Let me just ask a sort of a frivolous question, and thanks for the call. Jennifer, you know, the dog down in Pacific, his name was Gunner. I have a friend who adopted an adorable little pit bull puppy and named it April, which is a friendlier name, I have to say. As you go about naming dogs at the SPCA, what kinds of considerations do you give? And would you name a pit bull Gunner?
No, I wouldn't. It's feeding into a stereotype and feeding into a line of behavior that we just don't want to promote. We're going to, you know, I wouldn't name a dog Gunner or Killer, and it certainly wouldn't leave them intact.
Does it say something about the owners, either the name or the fact that they weren't neutered? What does it say?
Well, as a dog owner owning a large dog, and one of a pit bull type mix, to leave them intact, I think is speaks volumes for this case.
And John Vinton, I think you would agree with that. You said you only work with clients who have their dogs neutered.
No, I did not say that. I said that I'm a big proponent, and I always suggest to my clients that they get their dog neutered.
And if they don't, you'd work with them anyway?
Absolutely. I've worked with a lot of dogs that are unneutered.
Okay. Back to the phones, Michael in Oakland. Michael, welcome to the program.
Thank you. My question comes actually from something I think Jennifer of the SPCA said, which is that humans are not good at reading dogs' moods or intentions or what they're putting out. And my question is a reverse of that and has to do with whether dogs are good at reading human feelings and emotions and what we're putting out. And I say that as a dog owner who walks his two dogs often and tense up every time I come to a pit bull, and other dogs too, not simply pit bulls having to do with behavior, but pit bulls almost invariably. I pull my dogs back, I find my heart beating a little bit faster, and I'm in fear, and I'm wondering if that generates a response from the dog.
Jennifer?
Dogs are great at reading human body language and human feelings. And what is happening with you and seeing another dog is probably both of you are communicating. There's so much that happens on such a subconscious level around fear. And certainly, you know, you pulling on the leash or being tense, and if you're a horse rider, we know that horses can feel our bodies through the saddle, and that kind of tension can sort of keep up this, feed each other's emotions in those situations. But dogs are great at reading human emotions and body language.
And in that reading, though, does it promote a more aggressive response? Does the dog I'm afraid of get more aggressive because it senses my fear?
I don't know. It's, you know, like I said, behavior is so complex and there's so many triggers and so forth that that's impossible for me to answer.
John Vinton, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I think that it can happen, not necessarily all the time. I think you can't speak in absolutes. I think that dogs can. I mean, if you come from an assertive control issue, and as soon as your dog has that propensity to, you know, see another dog or person and go into that aggressive mode, if you are coming from a position like, I know exactly what I'm going to do and I'm going to correct this behavior, and you communicate that in an effective way, and it's not only just like your attitude, it's also how you control the dog with the leash and what you do and how soon you do it. And if you are at a loss of what to do, and the dog is just, again, acting on their impulses, dogs can pick up on that, and sometimes they can take that, you know, stress level up, and they can sense that, and it can act them, you know, react to a stressful situation. Much of aggression is based in fear and anxiety, and of course, if the owner is coming from a control situation, we're like, no, don't go there, don't act inappropriately when you're fearful, you're much less likely to, you know, or have much better control over that situation than if you're acting fearful and stressful as well.
All right,
I just want to add something, and I think John would agree with me. How you act towards other people's dogs is, and one of the worst things you can do is sort of the Caesar Milan, I'm just going to be dominant and take control of the situation. That's not always the best thing to do. And there's a lot of subtlety, and there's a lot of knowledge about dog behavior and reading signals that goes into doing something like that. So one has to be extremely careful about how they're going to respond, especially if you're going to respond in an assertive manner to a dog that you don't know.
But I think, Michael, you're saying that you pull back. You're not...
I'm talking about my response to the other dog I don't know, and I get nervous. Even when they assure me, no, my dog's a pussycat, I still, you know, I don't run away, but I find myself not believing that assertion just because it's made.
Yeah.
And the bottom line is I always advise people to listen to that little voice in your head. If you're nervous about greeting a dog or meeting a dog, don't do it. Just go ahead and avoid that situation.
All right, Michael, thanks for the call. Good luck. Up to Nevada City now. James, welcome to the program.
Hi. I've been following this issue for a couple of decades. I've talked to a lot of doctors about it. I can't believe how childish everyone is about this. Oh, my dog's great. You know, the fact is they are ticking time bombs. No one knows what triggers them. They chew people's arms and faces off. They kill people. You talk to a surgeon that's had to patch people up from these dogs. Why don't you have any emergency room doctors on this show? Why don't you have people that have to deal with the fallout of this stuff other than referring to somebody who just got murdered by one of these dogs? I can't believe the level of kind of juvenile narcissism that's displayed by the people who are fanciers of these dogs in complete denial of their lethality.
All right, let me bring Colleen Lynn. I don't know if you agree with that. You're obviously an advocate for people who get bitten by dogs, but I mean, do you feel that folks who, you know, advocate or defend pit bulls are naive?
Naive, yes. Self-centered, also, yes. I mean, innocent people are attacked, brutally attacked by these dogs every day, okay? And we don't have a lot of choices in that. We can't stop it from attacking us, okay? And then we can't pay our bills, okay? So we are the fall, you know, human beings and pets, of course. Pets are attacked even more frequently than people, okay? And the person says, you know, I'm 24 years old or whatever my age is as a pit bull owner. I love my pit bull. It's my best pet. And if something goes wrong, oh, well. I mean...
Yeah, but the statistics that you're referring to, Jennifer, I mean, we hear about the most horrific cases, and obviously there are, you know, dogs attacking dogs. We don't necessarily hear about bites, nips that we don't hear about. But, I mean, is there some evidence, at least, that more or a larger proportion of the problems with dogs are caused by, you know, pit bulls, Rottweilers, German Shepherds, dogs that are more aggressive?
You know, it's really challenging to get good statistics on this. You know, even some of the stuff, some of the research that's done on the severity of bites that wind up in the hospital, it's very confusing to get good statistics. The bottom line is that when it happens to you, it's horrible. It's also extremely emotional, as you heard from the last caller. And if you just pose two sides of the 24-year-old laughing and like, oh, well, versus I just lost my job and or I lost my loved one, well, that's completely polarized. There's so much middle ground here.
All right. Let's go back up to Marin. Michael is on the line in Mill Valley. Good morning.
Yeah, hi. We have a rescue, and she's generally really great. But if she gets kind of bitten by another dog, like attacked aggressively by another dog, she'll do her best to bite back.
I'm sorry, what kind of dog is
around
it?
Here, pardon me?
What kind of dog is it?
It's really hard to tell. She's a mix. But unfortunately around here, there are a lot of people who walk their dogs off-leash, and a lot of those little dogs off-leash are actually extremely aggressive. And they'll charge us and, you know, sometimes nip it at our dog, and it's really a challenge to kind of manage that situation. And I just wonder if there's a good way to manage the owners who have their dogs off-leash, and people assume that because their dog is small that it's not a problem, that it's aggressive, but actually it can create a situation between, you know, my dog who's on leash and their dog.
John Vinton.
Yeah, I totally agree, and that is an irresponsible dog owner. And to the point that a lot of people say, you know, a lot of people assume like, well, my dog is great inside, and he's such a great dog, he's no problem. But then they take him outside, and they lose control of their dog. I think it takes a lot to get a dog to be under control off leash, especially, you know, if you've got a dog that's charging up little dogs, big dogs, whatever. If he's charging up to people, that dog should be on a leash. You have no, if you don't have control of your dog, absolutely. And I think that that is an irresponsibility of the people who own that dog, no question about it.
And Jennifer Scarlett, coming back to pit bulls, is it a good idea to always keep them on a leash, or would you be okay going to a dog park with another dog that where there were pit bulls or one pit bull running around?
I think in the city, most dogs should be on leash all the time. That we have some off-leash areas. And once again, you have to know your dog. And if your dog has a history of playing aggressively or responding aggressively to little dogs running up to them, those are situations that you want to avoid. But pit mixes and pit bulls can, well-trained and knowledgeable owners can take them off leash.
Michael, thank you. Thank you very much for the call. Final thoughts, Jennifer Scarlett. I know that these kinds of things, when you read about them, hear about them, it's probably your worst nightmare because you know that there's going to be a lot of questions about the breed involved. But what should people be thinking about going forward?
One is all the joy that animals bring us. There's a reason why they've been in our life and why over the last 70 years they've even become more of an emotional bridge for us. And the second is responsible dog ownership. Have your animal spayed or neutered, and go to training class, and be considerate. And with that, we can move forward.
All right. Thanks very much to Jennifer Scarlett, co-president of the San Francisco SPCA. Thanks also to Colleen Lynn from DogsBite.org and John Vinton, dog trainer up in San Rafael. And earlier in the hour, Councilwoman Joanne Sanders from the city of Sonoma. Our conversation will continue on Facebook. Go to Facebook.com/KQED Forum. And Forum is produced by Kevin Guillory, Tina Lauberg, Judy Campbell. Our senior editor is Dan Zoll. Our interns are Mojgan Rostegar, Arjun Singh, Adam Susanak, and Natalie Rothfels. Our engineer is Danny Bringer. Our executive producer is Raul Ramirez. I'm Scott Schaefer, sitting in today for Michael Krasny. Thanks for listening.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation in honor of Louise and Claude Rosenberg.